Okay? And then sometimes, and people do say this, oh, ever since I took Kriya, my life has just been hell. And I profoundly and intensely object to people saying that. Because it is true, though, that you become more aware and you get in motion. And things will happen to you. But people who say that always forget that a lot of things happened to them before. That's why they got on the path, is because always that their lives were, generally speaking, their lives were miserable. And now they're on the path and they're not perfectly happy and they want to blame something else. So they blame Kriya. I mean, I don't want to go there, but sometimes people have just been awful with that. But yeah, things will happen because you will bring karma to the surface that suddenly you have to live through. And God doesn't really care whether you have a neat, happy life. He wants you to become spiritually free. So sometimes you say, oh, you're serious. Oh, good, let's get on with it. You know? But it's not bad. It's just energy. As you progress, you come to the point where you have figured out that being unconscious doesn't work, trying to control the world around me doesn't work, and you become interested in what is really true. This is where the little bird gets to the point, the third stage, which is called the quest. And the bird just simply wants to know now. He was told at the beginning what his mission was. He disregarded it and rebelled against it. He got smashed to bits over and over again. So now he becomes more humble and willing to just simply ask, what is really happening here? And the quest is a very profound stage because you've had enough experience to want to know. And that's in the process of healing the heart. You have to come to the stage where you're not just hiding from it and you're not trying to make others do what they need to do to make you feel right. You're genuinely interested in what's actually happening. And that's the real beginning of freedom, is when you really want to know and not just assert your willpower. But you have to practice those other things at some time or another before you're ready, quickly or slow, but one way or another. This is the beginning where you see reality bigger than yourself. You see that you see reality is bigger than oneself, bigger than I. My brother had this really charming quote, except with one insignificant exception, the entire creation is composed of others. Is that how he put it? It's, you know, the reality is bigger than I. In other words, especially bigger than ego. This is the point at which you begin to understand that just because I want it to be this way, I don't even know what is really good for me. There's just a bigger reality. And this is when the heart can really heal. Is when you just genuinely want to know what's true and you want to put what's happened to you in a bigger context. Not hide from it and not try to make the world adhere to you. And the way that you try to avoid pain at this stage of understanding is by self-control. And I don't mean by that self-suppression. That's not what I mean. Self-control is controlling your own responses. And you realize that I can never control the world around me. I can't make all those people do what I want them to do. That the way to avoid suffering is that I have to start changing myself. And you know, people live and they're always, and they're in relationships for many relationships, and they're always thinking, I'm not getting what I want. You're not giving me what I need. And it never occurs to them what they can do to serve others, how they can really give rather than just take for oneself. And then you also begin to think, who owes me anything? Or on the same time, your self-control is, I don't need to have to be in this partnership to be okay. I don't need to please this person to be all right. I don't need to make them do all these things. I can just direct my own life all by myself. And that's when you can really, this is the stage when you can really begin to forgive, because you think, well, they didn't owe me anything. They're just living their own life. There's a bigger reality than just my own ego. Just like my friend Paula, you know, the impact of this person's decision on her when she was thinking about her and making her environment the way she wanted it to be, you know, it was all about how I can make her do what I want her to do. And as soon as she expanded her awareness to realize there's more going on here than just my thoughts about this. Then all of a sudden she could feel that other person's reality, and instead of anger, it was just a great deal of sympathy. Now the irony of all this, of course, that this is a much better way to avoid pain, is what I started to say, to get people to do what you want. But really what I'm saying is that once you begin to take yourself in hand, then you get in the driver's seat of life. That doesn't mean by any means that you do what everybody else wants you to do. In fact, you suddenly have the freedom to just live your life as you expect to live it. And that's where you're not always pleasing everybody around you. I remember once I was in this situation where I had the opportunity to sort of do, I had a freer situation than the people around me, and Swamiji wanted me to go off with him and do this, take this journey. And I said, well, maybe I should just stay here and, you know, and he said, why? He said, well, they don't all get to go. So this was the second time he was sarcastic to me. He said, what will you do, just sit here and hold their hands like that? He said, the way to help people is to just follow your own karma with courage. You don't help people by not having the courage to do what you're supposed to do. That's, you know, again, trying to control your environment, that everybody's happy, nobody's jealous about me, nobody feels left out, everything is just so. Sometimes people try to be nice to everyone, but again, they're just trying to control their environment. I don't want anybody around me to be unhappy. You see? Thinking that that's where your happiness, you see how subtle it can get? But really, you control your own reactions, and sometimes part of what you're controlling is the fact that they just have to live through it. That was what Swami was saying to me. It's not their karma. You know, this is their karma. They have to do this. This is your karma. You have to do that. And I have to control my sense of anxiety about everybody's reality and just realize that people can take care of themselves. It comes out in very subtle forms. So this is the stage in which you just start asking what really needs to be done, and then you realize a lot of times the only thing I have to do is get over this. Nobody's going to fix it for me. I just have to have the strength within myself to overcome my attachment to being hurt, my fear of action, all of these different things. We have to... this is a stage of maturity. The world will not conform to us. And we can't hide from the world. The world will not conform to us. I have to move through the world with my own strength, facing what really is. This is where we say, it's not going to go back to the way it was. I'm not a child anymore. Does that make sense? And then the last stage, in the fourth, is what you call truth-knowing, truth-sharing. Truth-knowing and truth-sharing. And at this stage, you're just identified with spirit. I mean, this is the stage that we move in and out of, identified with spirit. This is the fourth and the last stage of the soul's long journey. Greater can no love be than this, from a life of infinite joy and freedom in God, willingly to embrace life on this planet for the sake of others, knowing the truth and sharing the truth. Okay, you've come out of the revolt. You've gone through the quest, and now you simply know what's true, and then you live it. And it's no sacrifice. It's not like you sacrifice yourself at this stage. There's nothing to sacrifice. There's no self separate from the greater reality. Everybody's consciousness is the same as your consciousness, and the little self that moves through this one is equal, but not less or more. It just simply is part of the whole tapestry of life. Swami Kriyananda is so interesting in that respect because he buys nice things for himself. He goes on holiday when he needs to. He goes out to dinner. He relaxes with his friends. You know, he does many things that he's not austere. He doesn't push life away because this one is one of many, and it too can rejoice in the stream of life. It's just a very balanced way of relating to the world. But the response to suffering is simply there's no pain to avoid. That's what I was going to say. Because how can this be happening outside of the will of God? In other words, wherever life takes you, you simply go with it. Because there has to be a duality for there to be suffering. There has to be a like and a dislike. Otherwise, it simply is. You know, that doesn't mean that one becomes mindless or lacking in discrimination. But the way Swamiji put it is, even underneath the suffering, there's still joy. Or what was the other thing I was going to say? Inwardly, you're always free. That was the phrase he used. Inwardly, you're not touched. Because if you live in a human body, you go through the ups and downs. You know, Swamiji has had to work very, very hard, and he's had many disappointments and struggles and days of sorrow for the way things have happened. But inwardly, on a deeper level than just the superficial waves, one lives in the depth of the ocean. And even though one has to ride the storms, you're identified with the depth of the ocean. And you know, that kind of suffering is so much less than if you're only living at the wave. You understand? So in our progression, as we unravel the pounding that's been inflicted upon us through all of our own karma, through all of these own years, we go through these stages. First, we're unconscious. Then we try to inflict our will upon the world around us. Then we recognize that I just want to know the truth, and I want to change myself in accordance with that truth, which finally leads to an understanding that this is all God's will. What am I resisting? And that even though life itself brings us trials, still, inwardly, we're always free. Does that make sense? Is there any questions or thoughts? Isn't this wonderful? I love this. There's only one part of this four-part thing. It can be told from so many angles, but I absolutely love this. And when you ask yourself, why am I suffering? You always find, I'm hiding, I'm trying to control, I don't want to control myself. Or, I think it's God's doing something to me, Sveta. Why don't we know that God, that never gives us a test we can't handle? Because what you're asking me is, why isn't it easier? He doesn't give us as much as we can handle instantaneously, as much as we can instantaneously handle. He gives us as much as we will eventually be able to handle. Will we handle it today, tomorrow? Will we handle it this incarnation? I don't know. People commit suicide. People commit suicide over and over again. Once you get on the track of committing suicide, you commit suicide lots of times. And then people will be tempted to commit suicide for a long time. You know, lessons, when I say not more than you can handle, I don't mean that you'll be able to handle it right away. In weightlifting, don't they have that point where you go to failure? Isn't that a concept? Am I correct in that? Where you keep pushing the weight until you can't push it? And then you work yourself up to being able to push it? And so God pushes us. It seems cruel, and the only assurance that it's not comes from the saints and from the scriptures. And then from those, even I would count myself among them, not a saint or a scripture, but one who has put enough behind it to have faith from real experience. Was I born knowing this? No. But by putting one foot in front of another long enough and having certainty that I couldn't do it, and then lo and behold, I could, enough times that when it begins to happen that you think you can't do it, then you remember that you can. Many people struggle for their whole lifetime. I mean, let me think how to say it. Some people, you just have really hard lives. Swamiji said, you see someone whose life is really fortunate, all their businesses are success, they have great relationships, every decision they make works fine, their health is perfect, their kids never take marijuana, you know, it's perfect kids. Everything. He said, you don't see all the lifetimes of courageous perseverance and suffering and sorrow that just sort of balanced out in this one, and you don't see the next steps after that. I don't mean punishment, it's just that an easy life is not necessarily a victorious life, and it's the waves up and down. And many, many people you stay in the revolt for a really, really long time. The little bird knew, even though repeatedly he lost everything he had. He cries to the wind, "How can I fly in this darkness?" And the wind says, "Surrender to me. Peace awaits you in the unknown," meaning have faith and go forward and it'll be all right. And I love this. After a time, it says, the tiny rebel surrendered. But you see, that's a very important phrase. After a time. How long? You know, we just keep trying. If we're just, you know, convinced that by being unconscious or not dealing with it or getting them to change is going to work, nobody's going to persuade you that it's not going to work. The only thing that's going to persuade you is you try it again and 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 again until it dawns on you that it's not going to work. And that represents a lot of suffering, incarnations of it. Pam? Oh, yeah. I always thought that being healed would mean that I would go back to the way I used to be. But I see now that being healed means I have to go on from where I am now. And what you're also asking me, say your name for me clearly. Sweta? Shveta. I keep making it Russian, I'm not sure. People grow their faith slowly by hard-earned personal effort. And if you're sitting, any of you, you or any of you, are sitting and don't quite believe what I'm saying, well, here we are. You know, you have to start somewhere. And you have to be honest to your experience. But if you don't do the experiment, you will always be stuck. But you have to even have some faith, enough faith in the possible result before you even do the experiment. And if you don't, I mean, there's nothing to be done. There's no persuading. You have to look into your own heart. They always tell the story of Edison, how many filaments he tried before he found the one that made the electric light. Well, 1,000, 2,000, was it? 60,000. But you see, he absolutely believed it could be done. And so he kept doing it. And so many of us, I was born with the thought that somehow I was going to be happy. And I didn't just mean like cheerful. I meant really like I was going to avoid pain. And I mean, I've had very little of it in this life, but I came in running ahead of it. I was just determined that I was going to avoid pain. Obviously, I've suffered a lot in a lot of different ways because I had no other ambition. And I don't mean avoid pain in the sense of unconsciousness, but to find a way to live that was a genuine happiness-producing way of living. I mean, it was a very subtle thought, even from childhood. It was a very subtle thought. It wasn't until I met Swami that the real articulation of it came to me. But I was always motivated by the same thing. I actually even remember being, the back seats of cars used to have that really big hump on the floor of the back seat, and I was small enough to lie on one side of that hump. And my mother scolded me for something that I had done, but nonetheless it hurt my feelings. And I recall lying down on the floor there, and the car was moving, put my ear on the rum, 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 you know, which is very soothing, the sort of the om sound. And I consciously remember retreating into my own self until I found the point where the pain didn't exist anymore. You know, it was a form of meditation. I must have been 2 years old, 3 years old. I was really small, but I was born that way because of past lives. And I want to be born the next time like that too. You know, it's a big picture. You just have to keep going. Have we ran out again? Okay. Well, I think that is enough for tonight anyway.